Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. You allies are also known as incarnationally coinciding accomplices. So before we dive into our wonderful, watery show, Sean Patrick O'Donohue and I will be doing an audio event Monday, Dark Moon, Vernal Equinox, Magic Kahoot. Let us be metaphoric first responders. And you can find out about that at coyotenetworknews.com. It will be at 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and it's by donation only. All right, there we go. So, yes, wonderful. Our guest, Brock, says it's time to take our fire fears and connect that with our water woes. Yes, because Brock is calls himself Fluid Druid, Water and Word Wizard, for auspicious hydro-cahooting, that we ally with beavers to cooperate. To cooperate is good for the whole community. The human relationships become more egalitarian. Even our rogue species learns manners. And now, you know, Neptune, Mercury, exactly aligned on Brock's moon in Pisces, enhanced collective receptivity to all he holds dear. And as we like to say at Trickster Council, and if it's not true, let's make it true. But it is true. So water would like to speak with us through its dedicated ally. We will honor the California deluge, the sky rivers stalling, losing their capacity for undulating flow. So let's undulate. To protect water, become more like water, says the Tao Te Ching. So Brock co-founded OAEC, Occidental Arts and Ecology Center, in 1994. That was the last time that Saturn, our dedication, was in Pisces. And Brock's Saturn is at 1 degree Pisces. It was his Saturn return then in Pisces, dedication to water. And it's his Saturn return now. It's very cool. The Occidental Arts and Ecology Center, where he co-directs the Water Institute, a wildlife biologist and watershed ecologist, he has been actively promoting bringing back beaver in California since the early 2000s. He was given the Salmonid Restoration Federation's coveted Golden Pipe Award in 2012 for his leading role as a proponent of working with beavers to restore native habitat. OAEC.org is the website. He will be contributing to the Bioneers Conference, yay, a panel on revitalizing the biosphere by protecting animal habitats and species. Nothing more important. Welcome, Brock.
Wow. Well, I'm so happy to be here with you, Caroline. Yay.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful. Your wife Carrie may have noted her being an astro cognoscenti, but it's so adorable. I'll just say it again because it's so fun. In 1994, that was the last time that Saturn, our dedication, was in Pisces, as it is now. And when you were born, that's where it was. So this is, you don't need to know astrology. You are astrology, Brock. So that's
so fun.
Super, super darling. Yeah.
I love that. And I'm glad
so,
you mentioned
as I said before, we've done. Yes?
Oh, I was going to say, I was happy to hear you also mention Bioneers because this Bioneers will be my 30th Bioneers in a row as well.
Wow. Wow. That's right. No, it's my 23rd. So you're my Bioneers elder, but yeah, it remains. You know, and I told KPFA about it, which is why they are partnering. I just want some credit, although credit doesn't matter. So that's great because it is in Berkeley this year. So there we go. And that's why I was so delighted. I was perusing the presenters, going, who to have on the radio? Brock. Brock Dolman, wonderful ally, and we have not spoken in so long. That's great.
No.
So.
Well, I'm always humbled and honored to be able to share the airwaves with you.
Right. Well, what you embody and what we aspire to is linguistic precision guides the vision, right? You're a very focused and wordcraft fellow, power of words, which you do so well. I watched the NBC News clip, Intersection of Fire and Flood, many times, right? And it's up on my Facebook page. It's up on coyotenetworknews.com. You know, everybody should watch it because it's very efficient use of 3.5 minutes. Super efficient. That's so wonderful. So, Yes.
Well, all props to the man, Joe Rosato, who did that clip. It was really fun working with him on that.
Yeah. So, so as I mentioned to you back in backstage email, you know, we've done three shows on Beavers, yay, with Ben Goldfarb and Lila Philip and Kristen Olsen, and here's yourself, you know, bringing back Beaver in California. So a little tip of the hat to Beavers if you want to dive in there.
Sure. Let's, depending on if it's an actual beaver hat or not, we'll see if we want to tip it that way. But there is a crazy book called They Were Once Hats. You know, the beaver is just this amazing critter, right? It's such a, it's a rodent, and it's the second largest rodent on the planet after the capybara of South America. And these big, beautiful orange teeth and that flat tail and just their capacity to be their creating conditions conducive for so much life by moving the water, slowing the water, holding the water, creating fire breaks, recharging, cleaning, creating habitat, irrigating wetlands and forests, sequestering carbon. They're just like the Swiss Army knife of critters. They're amazing.
Right. No, it's so wonderful and pictures and everything, but also what I derived, you know, just from Kirsten Olsen's wonderful book, Sweet in Tooth and Claw, Stories of Mutual Aid, and the wonderful phrase, symbiotic mutualism. I love saying that, symbiotic mutualism. There we go. That, you know, when the scientists and the ranchers and farmers in Nevada were working together around beavers, going, no, you don't need to shoot them. She said that the human relationships changed. And after a couple of weeks, all the farmers and hunters and so on said, let's sit in a circle. Anyway, so I do love this, you know, to cooperate, you know, it just spirals out there. So, yes, so beavers are your partner and the wonderful book called Eager, yeah?
So I would say a little bit of what you're mentioning there about the beaver stories in Nevada and the area around Carlin and Elko, Nevada, kind of western Nevada, people know that, northwest. And there's a wonderful rancher there named John Griggs, and he's become so, he's the perfect person because he's basically like, decades ago, we shot those beaver all the time. And now if we didn't have beaver during the drought, we'd be out of business because there's no water. And not just water, but the beavers hold water on the land longer and it laterally moves out and it basically subsurface irrigates the forage. So the cattle ranchers get more water, more food, they get it for free, they're staying in business. And so that symbiotic mutualism where they recognize that bovine and beavers can be buddies is the perfect opportunity, I think, and so many folks are having that watershed moment, if you will, and mitigating the cerebral imperviousness to infiltrate in the wisdom of the beaver.
Oh, well said. Well said, lad. That's really great. Yes. And then just to honor just the little bit about your Fuels to Flows NBC News clip, and that's so wonderful that with such precision, you know, best use of 3.5 minutes I've seen in a long time. It was like so dense and play. Well, it was very beavery, right? It was so, you know, useful, beautiful, dense, you know, it was like aphorism poetry. I say a lot in a little. So Fuels to Flows, you know, and you say normal is now, or I guess the narrator said normal is now fire and flood, you know, drought and deluge. And I forgot some other wonderful guest's definition, you know, of a desert is that when it rains, it floods, right? That's what a desert, that equals a desert. So, so address, you know, our team, many of whom are in California, of course, you know, and you've had deluge after deluge, but there's you in the NBC clip, you know, just going, how wonderful, you know, slow the sky waters down and welcome them.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, where that clip is really at is, I think, is responding to the issues of fire, not just in California, but throughout the arid mountain west, and the increase in intensity of fire that we've all been witnessing, and the magnitude and the catastrophe, at least especially with human life and infrastructure of fire, and how that fire in the ecosystem is a more complicated piece. But so many people are doing fuel load limbing and thinning, vegetation management, trying to manage the vegetation around their homes, what's called defensible space, so that when fire comes, hopefully it's not as intense and they don't burn their homes down. And that's very important work, and we've been doing that at OAC for 30 years. Our angle on that, though, is really honoring and acknowledging that all of that organic matter, that biomass that many people call slash and they think is trash to be gotten rid of, we see that as not trash, but a beneficial biomass. So the limbs and the thinned material, the trunk, the branches, that organic matter that's been sequestered from sunlight into sugar, into wood, into carbon, and carbon-based life that's mostly water, that resource to us says, let's limb and thin it for fire concerns, our fire fears, and then repurpose it into eroding gullies, into gullies that are dumping sediment to kill salmon downstream or dewatering our hillsides, and structurally, strategically place it in our waterways, or like beavers, make little dams, perpendicular dams to slow and spread and sink and store and share when we get that atmospheric river, and then sequester the carbon and recharge the groundwater and create habitat for our fungal allies to bring in, and then compost in place so the tree roots can get a hold of that water and be more fire resilient. So really seeing problems as solutions and integrated holistic reworking. It's almost alchemical reworking of the vegetation of the fire fear and the water woe becomes an opportunity to really craft a cauldron of collective convivial creativity if you can see carbon at the nexus of water and life.
Go guy, that guy, I feel like it's almost myself speaking, but better. That's very, very wonderful. I won't make you say it all again, but people can listen to the rerun. I'll listen to it again. That was a great flow, I remember saying to buddy David Grimes going, if we just got out of our own way, then the auguries would guide us, right? And Grimes rejoined and said, well, we should always get out of our own way so the will of heaven and earth can work through us. I go, absolutely. There we go. So there's a lot of, intrinsic, to work with water, become like water and the fluidity and the playfulness as well, and the no enemy, right? And I guess no waste is another, environmental, what is ecological, no waste. And that's really what you're embodying, right?
Yeah, I think the whole idea of waste is such a settler colonist imposition in ecosystems, that waste equals food and the output of one part of a life cycle. Life's evolved another part of the cycle to say, yay, thank you, your waste is my food, and thank you for the input, and by the way, my waste is your food. And trees are like, yay, we'll take in CO2 and we'll give oxygen, and animals and fungus are like, yay, we'll do the reverse. And that, just the integrated in interconnectedness of the, or interdependence is, as an ecologist, as a biologist, for sure, that's, to me, really where I get to water was really coming at it from biology and this amazing planet water we live on, where life is endemic to this place as far as we know it. And yet by volume, we're mostly water, even though we're carbon based. And so how do we reconnect the carbon cycle with life cycles for, and water cycles together? And that's what feels like is so broken with the dominant settler colonist dehydration, degradation, extraction, fossil fuel combustion paradigm, is that we've really disconnected carbon cycles, water cycles, and this capacity to support life cycles. And so re-engendering that, the woven tapestry of the connectivity of those fragmented threads is it's such important work, I think.
It is. No, everything you say. And, what hurts our hearts, whether we notice it or not, is throwing stuff away. Doris Lessing wrote about this eons ago in her brilliant book, Shikasta. It's like every time we put something in the garbage, it's like, and or even something really horrible in the garbage, which we try not to, but still, although I have my composting worms, they're doing what they can. But it hurts our heart, and what gladdens our heart, like I said, that your enthusiastic response to being guest, it's like, oh, you have gladdened my heart, Brock Dolman. But what gladdens our heart really is, biomimicry and an elegant design. It's like, oh, I think we have endogenous receptors for, cannabis and DMT. We have endogenous receptors for pattern and beauty, and it's like, oh, it really does our hearts good to see the elegant design. And are you finding that, like in biomimicry and Janine Benyus's work and your work, that it transcends politics, because when people see it, they go, oh, that's so beautiful. I mean, do you find that pretty much as if you can demonstrate that to almost anybody, they go, oh, that's great.
Yeah, I would totally concur
Or
with that.
on your.
I think Janine's work in biomimicry is amazing, or ecological emulation, if you will, like really emulating. And I think we all know that the idea of mirror neurons, and when you have a, when a baby is staring up at its parent's face, or at someone's face, the mirror neurons and that empathy. And when we stare at the face of an old growth redwood or a bunch grass or a beaver, the mirror neurons of the kin-centric worldview, like Enrique Salmon or Dennis Martinez would talk about kin-centrism, like the indigenous worldview, as Orrin Lyons would say, what you people, settlers, would call resources, our people call relatives. And like Einstein had a theory of relativity, and it appears to me that indigenous worldviews have a theory of relativity, where we're all kin, and then we move more into our responsibilities rather than our rights. And it's that the beauty of being able to respond, and responsibility, and have reverential relations and reciprocity, and that the symbiotic mutualism again, that gladdens the souls, the hearts, the minds, the everything.
Right. It really is the sine qua non, because when we damage the what we know that the pandemics will be over when humans quit despoiling the earth. That's just every virologist says that's it. That's there you have it, team. So much of the conversation about like is like, no, that just stay on that. Stay, that's the thing. Responsibility rather than rights, really great. And part of the I'll be presenting at Bioneers, Thursday night at 9 p.m. at whatever it is. I keep saying Crate and Barrel. No, it's Freight and some. Anyway,
Yeah,
it's
Crate and
free and open
Barrel.
to everybody. But thank you, thank you. It's not Crate and Barrel. It's Freight and Salvage. There we go. Kind of a good theme. And also, I love the phrase, that I've sort of coined with help of Bob Goff and many indigenous allies, but endogenous indigeneity, right? It's in us. And when we go against that, it makes our us crazy. And when we harm the communities of our kin, our kinship, then it manifests in our own community being pathological, right? And these effects, and so it's this is a great place to start. But also the preciousness, you mentioned, this wonderful precious, wet planet. NASA calls Earth a dry planet, right? And then says, are you surprised at that? But it really is. I've seen the maps of, this is the Earth, this is how much water there is total, and it's like, it's very tiny. It's a drop, right? It's like 2% or something like that. And in the same report they said, just for fun, Jupiter is the protector of Earth, and they said in any solar system where there's an Earth-like planet with precious life, there's going to be a Jupiter gas giant because it deflects asteroids. And it's like, oh, but it's a dry planet. I mean, and it's like so precious, seems abundant, But again, as you know, from the moment you took your first breath, really Saturn is limits and Pisces is water. There's only so much, right? I mean, that's it. So, but I'm so glad you're not focusing, although we might go there for a moment, on the amount of water we're taking out of life, with the fracking and the thing, and that it's like, well, it must be astounding to you to see
Yeah.
how humans treat water.
I mean, I think I so yeah, to the, some of those statistics, I guess, and Lynn Margulis, who I think really gets credit for this idea of planet water. It's a funny thing because I think we do pretty clearly know that the blue of the blue marble is water. 70% of the surface of the planet is water. All the green vegetation mostly
Right.
is water, the clouds, the snow. I think the 2% number then is within the between the surface area, but if you took the volume of water, that 2% is, or 3% functionally is really about the fresh water. So it's 97% salt water. And then it's that fresh water cycle, most of which is in the poles and the ice caps in its solid state. And then there's the 1% that's in the liquid fresh state that's moving between solid and vapor and liquid. And so the noun of water on planet water for 4 billion years, you could see has been finite, but the verb of water is infinite because it's ever changing and morphosing from solid liquid to vapor, and it's cleaning itself from its saline state into its distilled cloudy state as those sky water gifts, these atmospheric rivers and Pineapple Expresses of beautiful distilled liquid water in the Sierra Nevada, that flaky, snowy, crystalline form. And so that relationship of water as the Mickey Mouse molecule with the hydrogen oxygen bipolarity to be a solid, a liquid, a vapor is talk about magic and and a capacity in there. And so, yes, how we are despoiling or not both the saline state of the oceans and the what fresh water we have in the surface groundwater, whether it's fracking, is beyond, yeah, beyond distressing and such. And yet we've called to our allies to figure out how to clean this up, and we just have to embody ourselves, our upright naked ape selves, as bipedal sacks of saline solution salvation to come forward and move out of the headwaters into the hand and heart waters to do the work.
That's great. That's great. Saturn in Pisces now, in Pisces when you were born, in Pisces when you founded Occidental Arts and Ecology Center. Saturn is the god of cool, especially in Pisces. And I just love bringing this up very often, right? But our word cool is a popularized by jazz musicians is a Yoruba word, kulikulu, and it meant completely responsible. That's what cool meant. The cool musician is just the musician, the instrument, and the divine. No overplaying, not performance. It's magic, And they said that language is magic, and in Yoruba, as in English, cool is also temperature. And they said, and this is something we can all do. They said, so imagine all the heat in the head moving to the heart, which is where it belongs, right? So it's cool head, warm heart, the opposite of road rage, the opposite of social media arguments, which is like, whew, it's hot. It's very hot, right? So for all of us to be, to have cool head, even just imagine it now, cool head, all the heat moving to the heart, there we go. And the Yorba said, this allows for enhanced superconductivity of multiple ideas at once without frying our circuits. And we go, right. So the god of cool. So yeah, even when you're looking at distress, you are, cooling out. I do remember, I mean, I've been to your center, I can't remember how many times, but I guess the last time was after a Bioneers one where you had many, many great presenters. And I also loved your pond, which I, it was such a wonderful pond to swim in. Can you just honor your pond for a moment?
We can. I would love to ponder the pond. Boy, that is, yeah. So we have this
Yes.
wonderful. It's when it rains here. It's an offstream pond, and it fills just by the rainfall that runs across the native grasses, and it's sweet and clean, and fills up and spills and and provides habitat for myriad life forms, and we use it for all the irrigation for the farm here. OEC is the sixth oldest California certified organic farm in the state of California, actually. It's been organic certified since the 70s. And so we think of the pond as some often referred to as the Department of Home Water Security, right? Because no water, no life, no garden, no summer veggies without that pond. And I just really appreciate, I'm loving your bringing forward the origin root of cool and the idea of completely responsible relative to where we just were about the Bill of Responsibilities versus Bill of Rights kind of thing, and thinking about, well, then out of global warming, we need this the redefinition of global cooling, right? To be completely responsible to planet water, we could engender global cooling and the origin of cooling, like you just said.
Yeah. No, everybody be cool, right? Because again, just in that word, in the Yoruba, the cool guy or Gaia, you know, is dedicated to community well-being. That's what cool means. Right, and so everything is a dedicated act, you know, and the power of dedication, you know, whatever we're doing, you know, it's like by the dedication of this, may it be, we add a blessing to the thing. I also because you did send me your chart, and because your wonderful wife accomplice is an astrological cognoscenti, I just wanted to say an even more wonderful thing, which is. Okay, the Saturn in Pisces, when you were born, when you founded Occidental Arts and Ecology, and now, and we go, deeper dedication. We might come back, you know, what is your the thing you founded 29 years ago is ready for a deeper deal. I want to come back to that. Your moon, when you're born, is at 26 Pisces, which is of the degree is a vision of peace. That's where... James Hillman's Uranus was, and Neptune in the sky now, the power and intelligence of water and the dream that we're all in is right there for the first time in 165 years. You know, hence you are what you hold dear, you know, really is resonant in the collectivity of what people want to hear. So just to toss that, all of that back to your, oh wait, no, I have to say one other thing too, which is for your wife and for the astrologers in the audience, and your son in Virgo, linguistic precision, has a quintile, an exact 72 degree angle to Neptune. And as astrologers, we learn quintiles as irresistible eloquence on behalf of what we love. And we go, you're doing it, Brock, you're doing it. So that's super beautiful and humming. So do you, we have 2 minutes before break, but we can start and stop, you know, so is there a sense of like now 29 years in, you know, what's your, are you wondering what your next kind of deeper level of dedication is for these next 30 years?
Whew. Okay, we're cutting to the chase on the transition here, the just transition might move. Well, I think, yes, there feels like there's this Saturn return. There is this moment of the crescendo of what's so much of what's been coming to a point, and now it's ripe and it's ready to just run with the next level. And I'm absolutely feeling all of that work, and with the beaver work, with the watershed work, with the regenerative relations work, everything is amazing how it is so ripe and ready right now, and needing to take a breath and step up to this through the portal of the next iteration is very present, and something Carrie and I talk about and others here talk about a lot, the evolution, the succession moment here. The earliest program, right, I started actually was called Basins of Relations, and it was all about teaching people about the relations they share within their basins, which is making me think about cool, the word cool and relationship again.
Yeah, no, well, we're going to come right back to all of that. There's so much in everything you say. Again, it's like aphorism speaking, as though water itself had a chance to speak. Our more than perfect guest for today is Brock Dolman, and we will be, I'm Caroline Casey, and we'll be right back after our very short traditional Taj Mahal break. Here we go.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his Taurus cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. I will be giving a vernal equinox Monday night at 6 p.m. West Coast time, audio only, with Sean Patrick O'Donohue. It's the dark of the moon right before the vernal equinox. It's a time when people gather to determine the course of culture, so why not? And to toss, cruelty and dominance and grievance into the cauldron to dissolve it out of the human repertoire, keeping grief, but there's distinctions to be made. Our perfect guest today is Brock Dolman. You have to help me. OAEC.org is Occidental Arts and Ecology Center website, which is so inspiring. So yes, back to the coolness of dedication and wondering, your Saturn return and all. And the quintiles, it's very much like Mary Oliver, another Virgo word crafter like yourself, her poem Ode to a Summer Day. She's so good, and this is, I think, is very, very you too. She starts with a great detail. She's praising a grasshopper in detail, and then she teases it all the way out to the end, where she says, "Everything dies, and always too soon. Tell me, what are your plans for your wild and precious life?" And the Saturn return, in a sense, which you're literally having, but all of us are sort of happening, it's another opportunity to dedicate to water, like 1994. And it's like, well, what will we do with our wild and precious life? And what will we do with our wild and precious water? And then I one more thing before I toss it back to you, but, it's like, what we start on a Saturn dedication, and then the 29 years, it's like a circle that then gets struck by lightning and turns into a spiral. Are you thinking of spiraling forth your influence, your watery influence, in a further way? You do so much.
Yeah. Well, I love that you spiral back, if you will, in the beauty of a like a Fibonacci spiral, which is coming around back on itself, but it's a growth spiral. So it's just a little bit wider on each revolution and a little bit wider. And, actually the golden mean relationship of that whole Fibonacci series. And so in this return spiral, I think the offering is that we at OAC and the Water Institute right now are actively working on some video projects and a few more written pieces of work around the water work, the beaver work, the fuels to flows work, pragmatic kind of stuff that's really got dirt under its nails to help people implement and actualize, and yet also has enough principle there to kind of hold the pattern. Sometimes if the devil's in the details, the angel's in the pattern, and so trying to dance back and forth between those. So a little bit of evergreening, if you will, creating some of these videos, some other products that will help us amplify and reach more audiences without me in physical form having to run around. And I love going to Bioneers, we'll miss that, but how do we offer our little, allow silicone to be a conveyor, if you will, to bring forward some of this message of the watery carbon self in a way. And so we're working on that just to scale that up a little bit, which is good. And trying to just deepen into the least change for greatest effect principle that we have in our permaculture design world of being strategic and thinking of Archimedes and a lever big enough and a place to put it so we could move the world. And how do we organize around collective pulling on that lever to move planet water together in a good way?
Oh, that's so great. So you can join with me, and we go, all right, it's very hot. It's very reactive out there. We want to be the antidote. And part of that is, you know, I would just wish if humans would just quit the habitual overuse of the word impact, right? Mm-hmm. It's everywhere, you know, so social, I mean, and it's good-hearted people, you know, we want to have impact investing and impact this, and it's like, really, you want a short, violent asteroid encounter, like boom, as opposed to a long, curvy influence, a long, watery influence, you know, our investment is very influential. Influence is actually a word that comes from astrology. It's the flowing in. There we go. And it's like, it's gonna stay hot, you know, because language crafting and its relationship to water and everything, you know, it's like our brains, read great Science New York Times article, our brains are kind of literal about symbols. So when we use the word fight, you know, our brain goes, all right, and it releases this kind of adrenaline. Even fight for goodness, fight for justice. It's not that we can't use it. It's just that we want to be aware, right? And mm-hmm. you know, I think the backstage gods go, you can do anything you want. You can use any word you want, humans, but let it be from choice rather than habit. And then just tossing back to you, you know, influential, because what you're saying is like, yeah, so video projects that can go out and do the work and be ever more, that your dedication be ever more influential. Right.
Yeah, which is maybe different than what it feels like these days of like in the social media world of being a quote influencer, which feels to me like it's getting too much. It's like, oh God, I'm an influencer because I have my TikTok video or whatever. But I, you know, I think as you said, the antidote is really a doting auntie. We just need some more doting aunties to antidote the future going forward. And One of the things I'm in languaging that I find that I have put forward for folks to think about as a question personally and collectively is around this realm of disturbance and in ecological systems on this planet. To the degree that change is the only constant and there's dynamic equilibrium ever unfolding, then disturbance regimes and how systems respond and adapt and dance with disturbance or not. And then those of us who have agency, who have opposable thumbs and frontal lobes and engage in making change, are we degenerative disturbers in that change making or regenerative disturbers? Do we show up with the white settler patriarchy and clear cut and plow and pave and pipe and plunder and extract degenerative disturbance, or do we show up with humility versus hubris and regenerative disturbance and relationship and collaboration and the mutualistic symbioses? And so I've really been, a lot of the work we are doing here in our collaboration or tending of the wild, mending of the wild with our beautiful Western Sonoma redwoods and grasslands and oak woodlands is how do we show up almost like as medics within a first aid CPR moment and do no harm while we re-engage in the keystone processes of regenerative disturbance, bringing good fire back, slowing and spreading and sinking water, creating conditions conducive for carbon sequestration, returning the salmon that bring the nutrients from the ocean so when they die, all the phosphorus and nitrogen and potassium can be eaten by the redwood tree and held for 1,000 years in the anadromous nutrient pump. And so what does that regenerative disturbance regime look like, and how can we be agents of supporting that disturbance regime? And that idea disturbs people a lot.
Right. Well, you're speaking of disturbance as having a positive dynamic.
Well, I'm invoking the opportunity to hold disturbance in a non. It doesn't have to be a negative or it is often perceived of as disturbance as negative disturbance. But there are positive disturbance regimes that are also simultaneous, just like cooperation is happening simultaneously to competition. And so redefining that we can be agents of regenerative disturbance regimes that build fecundity and resilience And that's a choice, or we can behave in ways that are degenerative and destructive and such. And so disturbance is not intrinsically a pejorative either way. It's a choice.
Well, that's great. That's great. So we can, on our hotel rooms, we can put signs out that say, please disturb.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah. Exactly.
The ways in which humans are rude, and you're doing a wonderful you know critique, and here's what to do, right? And then just to, it's like the galumphing of the human ill manners. May we have manners again, you know, all that you say. And then there's also sound disturbance in a bad way in the ocean, because our friend Michael Stocker is so good on bioacoustics, and everything in the ocean mm-hmm. is sound, and we are, you know, harming and killing with our rude noises. And we could, right, because it's all, you know, flow forms and things you know more about, but we could have machines that made no sound, that were really quiet, but apparently, you know, Hyper Yang Death Frenzy wants the kind of to the thing, and so there's sound, which could be lovely, but Michael also talks about, you know, the whale songs that travel around the earth, and I said, well, was there a great era? And he goes, oh man, like the 80s was just a high time of, you know, blue whale music. It was, and but now it's all gotten stupider, or less complex, right? We're losing complexity because of human blundering, that they have to eliminate all the elegant cultural parts of their whaleness in the music just to get the message through. So when we harm, when we, you know, impose that, and are you inhaling to say something?
Yeah. No, I'm with you on the, like, imagine all the harms or degenerative disturbances to the various senses, all of our sensibilities of, if we could just lose our mind and come to our senses, and absolutely the auditory harms, and being a scuba snorkeler person who loves nothing more than to be on the big island of Hawaii with my head underwater while the humpbacks are serenading, and you're just, everything about you is reverberating with that relationship. I, as an ornithologist who does bird survey work for many decades now, right now we're having this moment in here in Western Sonoma County where the biophony, the symphony of life, the biophony is returning, and we've got the species that spent the winter with us, the white-crowned sparrows, who are singing as they tune up to go to Canada, while the native brown towhees are tuning up who didn't leave and won't leave, and the warblers from Mexico are showing up with their songs of the tropics, and the crescendo of this symphony in the next 6 weeks is going to just evolve, and every morning the dawn chorus of this amazing avifaunal biophony shows up. And the frogs right now are just out there, you know, just singing to their heart's delight. And so I'm with you, those good sounds, and or like light pollution. I know there's a lot of focus on the dark sky movement and the impact of light pollution and the degradation of so many people who can't see the stars anymore in their urban ways. So, yeah, what does it look like to re-engage in reconnecting regenerative relationships with the various senses is a challenge we all face.
Right. Well, there's so many ways to go on everything that you say. The Big Island, yes, I love the Big Island very, very much. Yearn to go back. And then just something, these moments we treasure. When I was snorkeling there, you know, a woman swam towards me going, you have to come see this. You have to come see this. And it was two feeding fish facing each other, and fish would swim between them, and the service fish would clean all the mites off of them. And there was a long line of fish waiting. And these were predator fish and prey fish, barracuda, right, patiently waiting in line next to little teeny fish, all waiting for the grooming service. And it was, and in a long curvy line, it was like that, the symbiotic mutualism that is, you know, humans, you know, truly to be humbled by, you know, the symbiotic mutualism in nature. You know, it was not humans in a gas line behaving badly. And then just the cacophonous sound and light, you know, just in small ways and huge ways, I had these, nightmare neighbors who kept putting on these incredibly bright lights. You know, like I'd step out my door and go, ah, and it made me furious, right? I mean, I want to be a peaceful person, but it made me just furious. The owl who'd been dating me and coming every night went away, right? And I'm like, oh, you ruined my dating life and the thing. But I as long as, you know, this is part of our strategy, as long as I minded, you know, Ursula Le Guin says we strengthen whatever we resist. I'm like, whew. And then I tried it into blessing. You know, you might be happier somewhere else. You know, I think nature frightens you. There we go. And they moved. After a while, it's like, you know, when we notice something horrible that's not there, it's like, oh, it's not there. And nobody's moved in. The house, very expensive house, has been empty and dark for the last 9 months. And it's like, oh, that's great. Wow. And then just on the level of magic, although I don't want to spook myself, is that, and all the streetlights on my street have gone out. It's like, just, I talked to the little dim streetlight going, nobody report you. You stay that. That's very wonderful. So then I just want to toss back to you, let's see, from so much of what you said, and of course you can go anywhere you want at any point, sound and light, right, and manners, and well, just the fact that loud sound, you know, of a cacophonous nature, like so many former music festivals, wonderful, 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 but at night, you know, it would be like doom, 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 and you know, and it's like, you know, animals live here, you know, anyway, so right, and just the fact that the light would make my animal self, and all of us, I think, furious, right? So you know, crime lights create crime. It's like, the bright is, oh, I'm gonna go mug somebody, and then just to get, maybe we could go kind of spooky in a sense, Neptune. Quintiles of your sun. And I like it as irresistible eloquence on behalf of what we love, which you're doing a splendid job of embodying. And then my wonderful friend, astrologer Sylvia Hanley, always says, yes, and the quintile is that, Caroline, and wonderfully clean and democratic, because it's the capacity, here's your, yeah, you don't have to be an influencer, but your influence and all your team of accomplices, it's the quintile's thought that you don't have to persuade anybody. It's really democratic and clean. It's holding a true perception, and that can also be in your videos and your work and your writing, so that it hums in other people. So they go, oh, I see that now, right? So it's really democratically clean, and you're guiding people to their own autonomy, a long-lasting influence. And then Sylvia said, you know, it is all that, but it's also the capacity to open portals between worlds. And I go, all right, and if it's not true, we're going to make it true. So just even in that sense, like, you know, oh, spirit of water, and just one more little thing, and then I will toss it to you. We're all being flooded in a good way, irrigated by memories. A million years ago at Findhorn in the north of Scotland in its early years, and there was a man who came to lecture us, or to talk, you know, Donald First from the World Federalists, and he was wearing a suit and sort of grown-up stiff shoes and everything. But he said, you know, there's all kinds of good magic going on, you know, in the Dag Hammarskjöld meditation room at the UN. And he said, anything for which we have a word, there's a God, or there's an intelligence, and he said, especially water. You know, so we in the Dag Hammarskjöld's meditation room, we will speak with the spirit of the North Atlantic itself. You know, and you know, anyway, I just want to toss it to you, going, what a good idea. You know, again, open portals. You know, do you feel like, you know, inviting in that which is larger than ourselves? You know, help with you. Well, you're doing it. You know, without being self-conscious about it. But I'm just tossing all that to you.
I'll accept the toss. The idea of the North Atlantic, and when I think about the North Atlantic, then we think about the gyre, the big gyre. And so, how can we gyrate in a resonant frequency with the gyres as we spiral and do that work together? And as with all of our team of accomplices, I love that, the team of accomplices, which is really the essence in ecology, or this phrase of emergent properties. You know, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, and the collaborative, use democratic opportunity of really supporting the team of accomplices. Whether it sounds like in Findhorn, they had so many accomplices in the spirit world, right? Those cabbages grew really big there because they had all this. One of the founders of Fintorn, apparently,
was,
one of the gals. No, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, I didn't. One of the gals, yeah, Dorothy.
One of those, the core people at Fintorn apparently visited here when it was the Farallons Institute in the 70s and 80s. And the fairy energy, the Deva energy that she felt in the garden here, she thought was the most she'd felt anywhere in the U.S. at that point. So there's, I resonate with how do we expand the width and breadth of what we might think of as accomplice, like sound that's healing, natural sound, regenerative sound versus degenerative noise, or like your light piece.
Yeah.
And who are the cleaner rasses that we'll all wait in line for to show up and be cleaned by the cleaner rasses at that, as you were talking about on the Big Island, which are those little fish, which I love those, where the turtle cleaning stations are, to go and just sit there and watch the turtles get a nice little cleaning. One of the most favorite things to do of all. Love that.
So what's the name of those little fish? I haven't been giving them credit, the little fish that are cleaning, what they're called?
There's many of them, but often when it's fish on fish, one of them that's well known is called a cleaner wrasse, W-R-A-S-S, cleaner wrasse. There's many kinds of wrasses, and they won't harass you, right? They're going to harass you in a good way. They're going to come and clean up. But then there's so many other kinds of fish, especially with the turtles. You'll get the bigger fish, the various tangs and the surgeon fish, and some of the sergeant majors will come and clean off the turtle shells, get that algae. But the little cleaner wrasses are so cute. Mm. They've got those beautiful yellow, blue, and black, vibrant neon stripes on them, and they're just long, little, thin fish that can just work around and wiggle. And so they've just got that essence of that undulatory frequency that resonates with life as they just go about doing their work in full trust inside the mouth of a moray eel.
Yeah, right. And it's like, you know, and the patient line of so many, you know, predator and prey fish going, no one's going to eat anybody in this line. And it's like, there we go. It's again, you know, creatures, animals, water as our moral mentors. I just excavated an article that scientists discovered that rats will not do something that is pleasurable to them if it harms another. You know, and I won't say what horrible experiments the scientists created to do that. But science. You know, but rats are our moral mentors, really. I mean, they won't engage in activity even if they get a yummy reward, if it harms another being, you know, especially another rat, but really anybody. It's like, oh, I didn't know that my pleasure caused you suffering. I won't have it. I mean, that's the essence of rat nature. All praise rats. You know, we love that. So,
I would say maybe in the word
again,
of mentors.
Oh, sorry.
Instead of having a mentor where there's just too much men in it, we need just the personators. Rats are just honoring the personators and their personage of honoring that connection. We do appreciate, we have a native rat out here called the dusky-footed wood rat. It's a pack rat. And much of the limbing and thinning and fire and fuel load work, if we're not going to put it in the waterways for erosion and sediment and carbon, we build these rat structures, these houses that are wildlife piles that the wood rats will nest in, because we have the breeding northern spotted owls here, and their favorite food is a good wood rat. So that whole back to the fuels to flows, it's not just water flows, it's nutrient flows, it's flows of wood rat into owl food, into owl pellets that feed back to the mycelium and the redwood tree that the rats nest in, or that the wood or the owls breed in. And what are the ways we can reconnect all of these flows is what most inspires me and brings the sense of beauty and abundance, or contrary to scarcity where there's not enough and we're irrational, we're scared in the city, clenched with fear. We move to the abundance paradigm where our buns are dancing with joy as we just wiggle forth into the wondrous watery world that brings us so much joy and pleasure.
That's so great. And so much craft and admiration, you know, all praise the the feeder fish and rats. I had a pack rat living, apparently it was a bachelor, I think, living in my yard, a yard with a wolf dog and a coyote, so it had a challenging ending. But when I found the pack rat's little home, his little bachelor studio is how I'm thinking of it, but it was just incredibly adorable. It was like a children's book because there were little packages of things all lined up, you know, seeds the same size and acorns the same size and little things wrapped in cloth. You know, it was like, oh, so adorable. You know, again, you know, intimacy does, you know, if we really knew, it's again, Joanne Locke, years and years ago, her wonderful book, The Voice of the Infinite and the Small, Healing the Human-Insect Relationship. And the minute I read that, I was like, we have to have this on. And she goes, yeah, the more we know, the more we respect, the more we cooperate. And you're a great embodiment and ambassador of that. And before we go out, you know, if you just want to say a little bit about you at the Bioneers Conference, you know, with your colleagues revitalizing the biosphere by protecting animal habitats and species. And I know that will be April 6th, 3 to 4:15 p.m. in bioneers.org. You can find out about that. But if you want to say just a little bit in our closing minute.
Yay. There you go. Well, I think, yeah, as far as I can tell with that, you know, it's really honoring our animal kin, the more than human animal kin, and all just the amazing capacities that these animals have, and the biosphere, the sphere of life, biosphere, and how is it that we can partner in the bioneering spirit of supporting the animals in this case. And then we can talk about the trees and the bacteria and the fungus and the tardigrades, but we'll primarily be focused, I believe, on the quote animal spirit and the animals themselves, keystone species, wolves and grizzly bears and orcas and beavers and oh my. So that's what I think we're going to be up for at Bioneers.
That's great. Well, I will see you there. I'm giving a talk that night, but if I'm organized, I will come to your thing at 3 to 4:15. That'll be really great. Thank you so much. Thank you always, Kirsten Thomas. A wonderful, wonderful board op, absorbing sun. Yay. To restore your radiance, because you bestow so much radiance, wonderful person. And thank you, Brock. I look forward to seeing you at Bioneers. That's really great. And OAEC.org is a place for great inspiration and how we should trim the bottom branches off our trees. Anyway, more soon. Thank you so much, Brock.
Okay, thank you, Caroline.